Calgary's only 24/7 all sports radio. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Another hot one on tap in Calgary. Beautiful day yesterday, some late thunder showers. 30 degrees, just the norm these days. But just when you think you got James Myrtle beat in life, who we chat with in mere moments, you text him and are informed he's hanging out at the lake. Mr. Myrtle, how is life?
It is a big thunderstorm and pouring rain here, so I think you guys might have a leg up on me, actually.
Well, if you're at the lake, though, there's puzzles and there's board games. What do you do to kill the time when it rains?
We watched a terrible movie last night, and and then we'll probably get into the puzzles today because we're running out of things to do here.
How bad was the movie? What was it?
It was Ender's Game.
I've heard about that. Apparently, it was a really good book, but that usually is the kiss of death, isn't it?
Yeah, it was not good.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us here on your vacation. I know there's not a lot of downtime in this NHL cycle, but this would be exactly that. We've got PK Subban's arbitration coming up on Friday. A brand new, very young assistant general manager in Toronto. Mason Raymond comes to Calgary as a guy that you watched last year in Leaf Silks. But the news yesterday was Jake Gardner's extension. It is $20.25 million for 5 years, $4.05 million. What is Jake Gardner, and what kind of a deal is this from both perspectives, the player and the team?
I think it's a great deal. I mean, it's a good deal for both sides, but I think especially for the Leafs, they were talking about doing a short-term bridge contract, and you know, you mentioned PK Subban. I mean, there's the perils of doing a short-term bridge contract right there in that the player could have a huge season, and then all of a sudden you're on the hook for a lot more than you would have been if you would have just committed to a more of a long-term or mid-term deal in the first place. And that's what the Leafs did with Jake Gardner. I mean, I don't think we know exactly what he's going to be, but I'm pretty sure we can forecast that he's probably going to play as a top-four defenseman. And right now in the NHL, top-four defenseman making $4 million a year, that's not an overpay. And he's a very young guy. He got locked up for 5 years. The salary cap's probably going to be in the $85 million or more range by the time that contract runs out. And if he's only making $4 million and playing in your top four at that point in his prime, it should look great.
How was he used last year by the Leafs in terms of ice time, pairings, matchups against other teams' lines?
It was kind of all over the place. I mean, he played a lot with Cody Franzen, but he had a lot of different partners early in the year. It wasn't really until the end of the season. I mean, when everything was falling apart for the Leafs, Jake Gardner was the only guy that wasn't falling apart. You know, he was their best player in the last 20 or 30 games of the year. Randy Carlyle started using him basically as the number two defenseman on the team behind Dion Phaneuf at that point, and he didn't look out of place. And you know, for people that are interested in the analytics or the advanced stats or whatever, I mean, Jake Gardner's were excellent. He's the best possession player on the Leafs last season. And I think for him, the sky's the limit. I mean, he can be a lot better. And he's one of those guys. He's not a big guy. He's really only about 180, 185 pounds. But he can skate like unlike probably anyone on the team and maybe anyone in the Eastern Conference on the back end. I mean, he's just that talented. And he's such a joy to watch just because of how he moves up and down the ice. And I think when you've got that, you can teach the sort of defensive fundamentals. You can add that to what he has, and he can be a very, very effective two-way defenseman later on in his career.
It's funny. The more you describe Jake Gardner, the more I think about TJ Brody of the Calgary Flames, who is coming off a two-year deal at just over $2 million a pop next summer. How would you compare and contrast the two, or are you comfortable talking about Brody enough, a guy that plays in the Western Conference and doesn't go up against the Leafs a ton?
Well, what I do know about Brody is that he's really underrated. I mean, he's a guy that doesn't get talked about enough and that has sort of surprised people in Calgary with how well he's done. And I think you're probably right. I mean, I think that that's a fair comparison because Jake Gardner, I mean, they got him in the trade for Beauchemin went to Anaheim, and Gardner was kind of, I don't want to say a throw-in, but he was definitely a prospect at that point. He came in, he made the team out of training camp, surprising everybody, had a great rookie season, and he's become an integral part of, I think what the Leafs are going to be going forward. I mean, it's Gardner, it's Kadri, it's Morgan Rielly, and Van Riemsdyk, Jonathan Bernier. I mean, that's kind of the young 25 and under core that this team has. And I think you can make the same kind of case for Brody being in that kind of mix for Calgary.
The one thing that just stands out, both of them, exceptional skaters. I mean, these are guys that could play 40 minutes and they wouldn't even seem to sweat, effortlessly moving around the ice. They can jump up in the play with ease. So I think this is almost sets the bar a bit for Brody, which is a conversation we've had a ton this morning, so I won't bog you down with it. One thing I wanted to talk about was Kyle Dubas. This is an interesting hire by Brendan Shanahan, and I think it's being more and more clear with each passing day that this is indeed Shanahan's ship, whether Dave Nonis has the GM title or not.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, you could see that at the draft. You know, Shanahan, I think what people have to remember, Shanahan was airlifted in pretty late in the process. I mean, they didn't bring him in until, you know, mid-April. And he needed time to assess what was wrong with the Leafs. I mean, he hadn't really been following them that closely. And other than keeping Randy Carlyle, I think almost all of his moves have been very, very good. And for a first 3 months or 3.5 months on the job, I think that Brendan Shanahan has done a very good job, especially for a guy that has never worked in a team's front office. So I think Leafs fans have to be happy. And the bringing in Kyle Dubas, I think that that's one of, in my opinion, he's one of the brightest young executives out there in hockey. I'm surprised it happened this quickly for him. He's only 28 years old, but I'm not surprised at all that he ended up with an NHL team. And he is going to be one of the youngest GMs probably in NHL history at some point within the next 5 or 6 years. You know, that's how strongly I believe in Kyle Dubas. And he's a guy that I've gotten to know and I've talked to on email quite a bit this season. And the Leafs couldn't have made a better hire, in my opinion.
The one thing that you said in the aftermath, which I thought was really, I don't want to say profound, but it wasn't the same take everyone else had. A lot of the people that aren't comfortable with analytics, or they aren't sold on its value, or they aren't sure how to quantify these numbers in terms of comparing them to the eyeball test, the hire to them was strictly, okay, now the Leafs are an analytics team. They're now going to be looking at Corsi numbers. Your take was, look, the biggest thing about the hire is showing that the Maple Leafs front office is now open-minded and going to listen to a lot of different opinions, not just have one mentality of how everyone has to think. I like that.
Yeah, and I think the problem with some of the old guard that they had there, and even Nonis, is that they're just a little bit, they always struck me as too close-minded. And, you know, they didn't like the idea of the analytics or the Corsi and all that stuff that people were talking about the last couple of seasons. But in my opinion, they didn't even understand it. I mean, they didn't take the time to really, I mean, I think it's pretty clear they didn't understand it. You know, I mean, if they would have seen, I think we can debate how much value there is in some of the numbers available in hockey, because hockey is way behind baseball and basketball and even football. I mean, there's a long way to go for hockey to get there. But there is some use with those numbers. And for an executive in the NHL to say that that's all garbage and it's not even worth looking at, I mean, that just sends up a big red flag for me. And that's what was happening with the Leafs front office. So they make some changes. They get rid of Dave Poulin. They get rid of Claude Lazelle. They bring in a young guy who explicitly knows all of this stuff, you know, not just is open to it. I mean, he actually understands all of it. He can be an advocate for it in the front office. It forces everyone else, Dave Nonis, Brendan Shanahan, it forces them to sort of confront these new ideas and think about them. And you look at some of the moves that they've made over the last week. I don't know how involved Kyle Dubas has been in them, but I'm sure he would have approved of all of them, signing Dan Winnick, signing David Booth, and giving a more of a long-term contract to Jake Gardner. I mean, those are all things that someone with an analytics background would be supportive of.
Yeah, certainly at the dollar figure for Booth. No one's suggesting he's going to go back and get a 31-goal season, which is his career high from Florida. How would you characterize Brian Burke and his, belief in advanced stats, or what the value he'd placed on them? Because you watched him work in Toronto for some time before things ended there, what, a year and a half ago?
Well, I know he doesn't place a lot of value. I mean, he and Dave Nonis are on the same page on a lot of things. I know, at least when he was in Toronto, for sure, he didn't place a lot of value in the kind of analytics that you or I would be talking about, the really basic kind of stuff. You know, Burke was always very, very skeptical of that stuff. And, you know, everyone's heard him go to the Sloan Analytics Conference and sort of denounce the idea that you can build a team using statistics and all this kind of thing. So I don't know what the dynamic is in Calgary. I mean, frankly, he and I are not on speaking terms that often. But I know they do. They have Chris Snow there. I know they look at some video kind of analysis and things like that. My opinion, I would say that Calgary probably isn't as progressive as some of the better teams in the NHL that use some of this stuff. But, you know, with the new general manager there, That's going to start changing, I think.
Finally, you had a chance to see a lot of Cochrane product Mason Raymond last year on what was a very nice buy-low deal for the Leafs. They bring him into training camp on a tryout, and he certainly met the expectation and exceeded the value of his contract last year. What do you expect out of him on 3 years and $9 million here in Calgary, the deal he signed July 1?
That's probably fair value for him. I mean, he's kind of like your... I think if he's your 6-7 forward, you're doing pretty well. You know, he's a guy that can put up 40 points, that can kill penalties, very good skater. You just don't want to put him too high in the lineup. You know, he's got limitations, and, you know, he hit some of those last year. I mean, the Leafs were playing him a lot of minutes, probably more minutes than he should have been getting, and it's because they didn't have any depth last year, and that's something that the Leafs have been able to change. But, you know, 3 years, $9 million, that's probably appropriate for Raymond. He's one of those guys that can have stretches where he looks like he's a much better player than what I'm saying here. He had a very, very good start for the Leafs, very good first 20 or 30 games, and then cooled off. And when he looks good, you think, man, this guy can be something. And when he looks bad, you think, get this guy off the ice kind of thing. So I don't know if inconsistent is the right word, but he had a very inconsistent year with the Leafs anyway.
Well, and you know what, at $1 million, I think you'd take what he gave you for sure. Great value there. What do you make of PK in Montreal? This is becoming very interesting as the numbers have now been released. Elliot Friedman tweeting earlier that the Habs arbitration ask is 5.25 and PK Subban's camp is 8.5. That's huge separation, but does it really matter? It seems like everyone thinks this will be settled before they get in a boardroom.
Yeah, they're not going to want to drag him through that, and they're going to want to get him on a longer-term contract than a one-year deal. And you go to arbitration, you get a one-year deal, and then you're back in arbitration again, you know, a year from now. And it sounds like Montreal has sort of figured out that Subban is going to be the face of their franchise. You don't hear this talk about that it was there a year or two ago. Maybe they're going to move him. They're not very comfortable with his personality or what have you, the dynamic with Subban in the dressing room. But what happens with these cases, I mean, this is a tougher one because they're trying to do a longer-term deal. I kind of wonder maybe they're going to settle on something short-term and then work on the long-term down the road, but it's going to be a big number for Subban. I mean, he's looking at more than $7 million, so you can look at those arbitration numbers where the team's talking about 5.25, and that's just a complete joke.
And if you're PK's camp, don't you have some leverage here heading into arbitration? Like, the last thing the Habs want to do is lose an arbitration case, pay him 8.5, and have to do it again next year.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. And I mean, that's what happened with Ryan O'Reilly in Colorado. I mean, all of a sudden, I mean, that was different because it was an offer sheet, but all of a sudden the qualifying offer is a lot bigger. And, you know, whatever kind of arbitration award you get, it sets the bar for the next year's contract. So, yeah. And the other thing, too, is, I mean, as people have seen, I mean, none of these cases ever get to arbitration just because the team and the player both don't want to go through that process. I mean, it's really a mudslinging contest, and, you know, there have been a lot of horror stories. So more and more the last couple of years, teams have really been trying to avoid arbitration, and that's probably what's going to happen here, too.
It's funny, because if you measure arbitration, you would have to call it a very successful process because it does bring the team and the player together. It just hasn't happened in the boardroom. It's happened, you know, 24 hours before.
Yeah, and that's what player agents will say, is that, you know, people say arbitration's broken or doesn't work. Well, it works because teams avoid arbitration to get a contract done, and it sort of really forces them to find a middle ground, and that's how it works. It, you know, it's almost like arbitration's so bad and so broken that no one wants to go through that process, and it's kind of like a spin the wheel. Who knows what kind of contract you're going to end up with, where, you know, maybe you'll take the devil you know in the deal you can negotiate, as opposed to putting in the hands of an arbitrator who might not know hockey, really, and who knows what he's going to choose.
Appreciate your time this morning, James. Always good insights on all things Leafs, NHL, and I think your insights on Dubas are interesting as well. When do you get back at it in terms of working on some newsprint and getting back into the NHL beat?
Well, just on holidays until Monday, end of the long weekend, and I'm back at it again. Yeah, it's hockey world's pretty quiet. You know, the Leafs have been busy the last week, but I think it's going to slow down here. August is going to be a dead zone.
At least you've got PK in Montreal to talk about on Monday, huh?
Yeah.
All right, thanks for your time, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan.
All right, that is James Myrtle of the Globe and Mail on vacation, joining us from the lake. Lovely. Pleasure chatting with him, and we thank him for that. Coming up before 10 o'clock when the show moves along, we'll join Jordan Henry next, a guy that played over in the KHL as our continuing Life in the KHL series this week. Some good stories and some interesting insights. He played in Minsk, the capital of Belarus, What are the Belarusians like? What is Belarus like? What is the KHL like? Horror stories, things that to get blown up out of proportion. That coming up next, and what you want to talk about at 9:20. Also, some breaking CFL news. The Montreal Alouettes. Boy, you cannot write this stuff. We'll be back with that news in a moment. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Talking hockey right now. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Welcome on the Subway Restaurant's Fresh Take Hotline, a former Flames defenseman, Jordan Henry. Hank, what's up?
How you doing?
Good to hear from you, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks. How are you guys doing?
We are well. It is a Wednesday morning. It has been screaming hot, 30 degrees, blue skies, a little thundershower action last night, but hot, dry couple weeks here in Calgary.
Well, that's nice for you guys. It's been raining all week here in Toronto, so you're getting the good weather. We aren't.
Well, suck it. That's all we have to say about it. You know how the Western Canadians feel about Toronto, right?
I do. I really do. So, you know, I'm not feeling sorry for myself, that's for sure.
Well, and congratulations, by the way. A little birdie told me you just got married.
I did, yeah, about 7 months ago. So, yeah, I'm happy here in Toronto with my wife now.
And you're still together? 7 months in.
Still together. Still together.
Okay, wow. Congrats. Do we have a round of applause for him? Can we give him a round of applause? That's 7 months. Wow. Jeez. I think 7 weeks is like my longest relationship. But, Hank, I got to take some notes from you, buddy. I got the idea over the summer earlier on. I'm kind of the co-host, the sidekick on the morning show here, but Boomer's on vacation. Boomer's the main guy. When Boomer's gone, we get to talk about what Pinder wants to talk about. And I kept running into guys around town and recalling my time in Abbotsford, talking to guys that had played in the KHL and just how absolutely zany the stories were. And if there was one thing that I never got tired of, it was talking about Russia, the KHL, and just some of the oddities of playing over there. Because as a league and as a paycheck, it is number two option behind the NHL for hockey players. And yet some of the things done over there, it feels like minor midget in some ways. So take us back to your KHL days. When did you play there? Where were you? And what the heck were you expecting when you went overseas?
I played there, I think it was about 4 years ago now. I played in Minsk, Belarus for Dynamo Minsk. That was my first experience in Europe. I'd just came off my first NHL contract with Florida, and you know, we didn't really see eye to eye on the negotiations, so I got an opportunity kind of last minute, popped up in Russia, and I'd never been over there, so I decided to take it. Like you said, the paycheck was great, and the hockey was great too. I mean, it's a great league over there, highly skilled, a lot of ex-NHL guys, so it was my first experience in Europe. But yeah, I didn't know what to expect. I was going into it with my eyes wide open. I'd heard some of the stories, obviously, and it was different for sure. I mean, the fact that it's a completely different culture and everything is definitely a shock when you first get over there. It's nothing like North America as far as the people and the lifestyle, that's for sure.
No, so Minsk is in Belarus, and Belarus is obviously a former Soviet satellite country. It was in the USSR, but now it's its own country, and it's not a terribly open country. This isn't like its neighbors in the sense that it's an open democracy where you can travel in and out with ease. What was Belarus like?
Minsk is actually a fairly nice city as far as that league goes. It's you know, about 1 million people maybe, but it's very old school European, like you said. I think the president of Belarus has been in power for about 20 years, so
it's a nice
that
run.
Doesn't happen by accident, I don't think, for sure. But it was not a bad city as far as that league goes. Like I said, it had some nice things, some nice restaurants, actually a lot more English speaking restaurants and stuff like that than I thought it would have. But I think I was pretty fortunate when we got to travel and we saw some of the smaller cities that the league goes to, that's for sure.
So you were over there. The league has changed a bunch even in the 4 years that have passed since you played there. They're going to have a team in Finland next year. They now have teams in Italy vying to be in the league. It's probably only a matter of time before you see it in, let's say, places like Germany, maybe a team in London, maybe one of those Swiss teams jumps in there. How Wild West was it when you played? Because you mentioned you'd heard the stories. Were they still paying guys in cash before practice?
Yeah, there's been a lot of rumors, actually, about a whole kind of European division going in there, and they're starting to get some big European cities, which makes it pretty attractive for probably North American guys and top-end European players as well. Yeah, it was pretty much only Russia when I was over there, and there was some pretty crazy stories, not so much from where I was playing because the government was heavily involved in our team, but I heard stories of guys getting paid in, you know, suitcases full of cash and stuff like that, and not getting paid if you weren't playing well and things like that. And so, yeah, it was crazy. I was fortunate to be on a team where things were, you know, standard, like here in North America, direct deposit into a bank account and nothing really shady going on with the money, which was nice.
What about the doctors and the travel? Those are the two of the other things that people continually, you know, you never run out of stories about the crazy pills and syringes. The training staff would come up to you, they couldn't speak English, and try to ram into you. And then the other thing is those Russian jets, no one seemed to trust them.
Yeah, the travel, we flew on one of the jets, I guess, that the Lokomotiv team crashed on. We flew on it maybe a handful of times. Not that many, actually. We usually were, you know, the standard 737s, which was nice. And I think, you know, the only really horror story about flying that I had was we were delayed on the runway. I can't remember where we were, somewhere in Siberia in the middle of winter, and we were delayed on the runway, and the pilot comes on the mic and he says something in Russian. So I asked the guy beside me what he said, and guy told me that they were just going to de-ice the plane and we'd be off right away. And I thought, oh, no big deal. You know, they're going to bring the truck and spray it down, spray the wings, just like they do over here. So I flipped up my window shade and I look out and I see a guy standing on the wing with just a regular, you know, driveway scraper. He's slamming it down on the wing. Ice chips are flying everywhere. And I thought maybe that might be my last flight. So I just flipped my window shade down and went back to my business and tried not to think about it.
So de-icing the old school way, right? What do you mean?
Yeah,
foam,
very
spray.
Very old school.
We're chipping it away here.
Yeah.
Now you were one of the only Europeans or non-Europeans on this team. There's a few Canadians. No one American goaltender, Robert Ash, who of course we'd all be familiar with for his time in Philly. But this was a lot of Russian being spoken around the team, I imagine.
Yeah, there was. There was a ton. It was fortunate because most of those guys had played on the Olympic teams and world championship teams for Belarus, so they had been around Europe and been around North America, so there was a good portion of them that knew English. But, yeah, it was full-on Russian in the dressing room. Our coach didn't speak a word of English. He couldn't even say good morning to me in the morning, so it was definitely an adjustment.
You talked about the Russian planes versus the 737. That seems to be a big deal. Following the Yaroslav Lokomotiv accident, the league promised to go to the North American jets, not the old Soviet ones. They've backed off that, or at least they haven't told anyone, but they have gone back to the old school jets. We've heard from guys still playing over there. Did you notice a difference when you got on? Is it really apples and oranges?
It just looked old, really. The inside looked, you know, old. I mean, now in North America, you can tell when you get on an older plane because they're always pumping out new ones. But the planes on the inside were noticeably older, and the fact that I'd never boarded a plane through the back end with a single set of stairs was definitely something new as well. But you could just notice that it looked old on the inside, and so, I mean, you never know how the maintenance and things are going with that kind of stuff. So it was a little scary, that's for sure.
Tell us about the travel, because we had Luke Walker, former Colorado draft pick, that was over in Zagreb last year in Croatia, telling us 9 time zones, crossing 2 continents from Europe all the way over to north of pretty much Korea in Kamchatka. What stands out for you travel-wise?
Yeah, that travel was insane. I remember when we went to all the way across, we were the furthest team away from the one team right by China there. We played a couple games on the way out, and then when we got there, we played and we flew back, and it was like we gained time somehow on the way back. It was like a 10 or 12 hour flight. We had to stop in the middle to gas up, and it was crazy because, you know, we left when the sun was going down and we arrived in the middle of the day, and it was, I couldn't believe it. I don't think I've ever been on a flight that long, and that was including the one that I came over from Canada to Europe on. So it was crazy. You can't believe, you know, that team, their closest game is 5 hours flying. So the schedule is just insane for them. I can't imagine that kind of travel to play, you know, 30-some road games.
Yeah, and the good news is they've now got a few more teams over there, so at least if you're going over, you get to play a few, whereas before, as you mentioned, they were an island out there, man. They're way out there. Any cities that surprise you that you'd love to go back to, or the flip side, you'd be happy if you never saw them again?
Well, there's a few cities that I, you know, you think playing in the minors in North America that you have some cities that are kind of not that nice and things like that, but over there is a whole new ball game. You see a city that's, you know, run down and looks like it's got nothing going on, and then somehow they have a brand new arena built by the one company that runs the city pretty much, and then the team is there. So I can't imagine going back to places like that, but you know, there's some pretty nice cities over there. Riga, Latvia, and St. Petersburg is a beautiful city, very Europeanized, and you know, cities like that are definitely cool. And they're putting a few more of them in the league now. You know, like you said, there's one coming into Finland, and Italy's been vying to get a team. And, you know, down there in Zagreb, they've got a nice setup there. And so it's getting better for sure. They're trying to eliminate some of those teams, I think, and make it more attractive to get big-name players.
What was Moscow like? Because we hear it a lot. It's a huge city. It's one of the biggest in the world. It's one of the most expensive in the world. And apparently the traffic is absolutely chaotic. What do you remember about Moscow?
Yeah, the traffic was ridiculous. I was just going to say before you brought that up, it was crazy. I mean, there'd be three marked lanes of traffic, and there'd be five cars wide, people jetting in and out, crashing into each other. And the one thing that sticks out was there would always be these old Ladas stalled in the middle of the road, and they would be being towed by another old car, but not conventional towing. They would just have a rope attached between the two bumpers, so when the guy stopped, the other car would bump in the back of them, and it was just insane because the people were making five lanes of traffic out of three lanes of space, so it took forever to get anywhere, that's for sure.
I'm just reading online. There's more billionaires in Moscow than any other city on Earth. And it's the coldest mega city on Earth. I wonder what a night out in Moscow feels like.
Well, it's chilly. You better have your jacket done up, that's for sure. I don't know. We didn't spend too much time going out in Moscow since it was such a close flight. You know, we flew in, played a couple games, and flew out right away. So didn't spend a whole bunch of time there, but yeah, it is. It's a high-end city in areas for sure. I mean, they have, you know, good restaurants, stuff like that. But it is very expensive to live there. And there's the areas where, you know, the billionaires live, and then the areas where the rest of the population lives, and they're not so glamorous. That's for sure.
So, if I was a buddy of yours that let's say we played junior together, and I'm mulling over a contract in the American Hockey League, and they're trying to put me on a two-way, not a one-way, and the down money's not going to be that good, and suddenly my agent says, hey, we got an offer from a team in the K, what would you tell that guy?
I would tell him that, you know, as long as you're going to a team and a city that is okay to live in, then, you know, it's not going to be that bad. And, you know, check out the roster of guys they have signed and see, you know, what kind of American and European, you know, content they have on their roster, stuff like that. I think you have to definitely commit to it because it's not, the lifestyle is not for everybody. And you know, I'm not sure I would recommend it to guys that have, you know, families that would stay over here and stuff like that, because it's really tough with the time change, everything like that, and things of that nature. But I mean, like I said, you can't really deny the paycheck, that's for sure. And the hockey was great. I mean, it's only getting better.
Jordan,
so it's a good opportunity, definitely, but you know, you have to go into it, you know, full on and with your eyes open, that's for sure.
You split time last year between the A and the ECHL. You have plans for next year, or where are you at hockey-wise?
Just waiting right now. Just waiting, you know, kind of for something to come along, I guess, and similar situation to last year. I still think that, you know, there's opportunities out there, and I had a pretty good year last year, so I'm hoping to build on that and go in and you know, catch on and keep moving up.
Thanks for sharing some time with us. Keep us up to speed with wherever you land. And I know a lot of folks out around Strathmore and here in Calgary remember you fondly. So let us know when you're back in town.
Will do. Thank you very much.
There he is, Jordan Henry. Good guy. It's in Belarus. Interesting. Kind of want to get over there. You think Boomer in the Morning would could do a remote from Minsk one day? You know what the best part about that would be? We'd be starting at like 4 in the afternoon. Oh, we could sleep all day. Brilliant. Good show today. That was pretty awesome. If you missed anything, we'll have it online later on today. Joe Siddle, the Blue Jays color analyst, if you want his insights on Marcus Stroman and exactly what you can expect the Jays to do before the trade deadline that falls tomorrow and then the subsequent waiver trade deadline, which obviously is well into August. Also, Ryan Jankowski on the Program of Excellence with Hockey Canada, their under 17, under 18 event gets going at the Mark and McPhail Center starting tomorrow, Friday as well, and then Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. The top players in our nation, the U17 and U18, in one building on a couple ice surfaces for 5 days. Kids under 12 get in free. That's a great event. That interview will go up later on. And of course, we had James Myrtle at the top of the clock. He chatted all things Leafs. Talk a little PK Subban arbitration, as well as expectations for Mason Raymond, the Cochran product, who is set to start a 3-year contract, $9 million, a July 1st signing by the Calgary Flames. So all that available, should you want it, on sportsnet.ca/960. I had a tease of the CFL, the Montreal Alouettes back at it. There has been a ton of changes of late. Since Anthony Calvillo's left, they had a new head coach. They canned him early last season. Tom Higgins is hired by the owner, but not the general manager, Jim Popp, this offseason. The offensive coordinator is gassed before the season starts. And Arash Madani reported almost an hour ago that Don Matthews, and I'm reading Arash Madani's tweet, yes, that Don Matthews, as well as Turk Schonert, have joined the coaching staff as consultants. I don't know that the Don's going to sit on his hands on the sidelines for long. We'll have to catch up with Arash on that at some point. Maybe between now and the end of the week, we can have someone on to try to make some sense of exactly what's going on in Montreal. The Alouettes look lost post-AC, and suddenly they're not filling that relatively small park, Percival Molson Stadium, on the University of McGill campus in Montreal. So Don Matthews may be back in the fold, certainly in a consultancy capacity, maybe more the way they've played musical chairs with their coaching staff. We'll come back with what you want to talk about. And yeah, we get letters. We get mail here at Sportsnet 960 The Fan. In fact, we have an email address where you can send us your thoughts anytime. Maybe you're stuck awake at 3:30 in the morning, and my goodness, you've got TJ Brody's cap hit on his next deal on your mind. You can send us an email. In fact, we've got a tons of mail. We're going to read some of the emails that we've got in our Fan 960 inbox. We'll give you the address as well in case you've got some similar news that you can bring us up to speed with. It is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Interact right now. Text 960-960 to sound off. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
This is Chuck Berry on the guitar, right, Jay? Yeah? Yeah, it is for sure. Okay. Yeah, maybe not. It is Pinder and Humphreys in for Boomer. He is melting the pounds off in Vegas, where the high is 1,000 million degrees. It is the core of the sun in the desert right now. That's how hot it is. We'll get to what you want to talk about in a moment, but first, one thing that the Rocket is always encouraging of us is to be interactive. You know, we've got Mr. Voice, like, interact right now. And we've got, you know, interact with us. He wants us to interact with the listener. He's like, you know, maybe we could read some of those emails on the old feedback email. So we have an email address, fan960@rci.rogers.com. So when you have a sports take that is so plaguing your mind, you can just get that off your chest, write us an email, fan960@rci.rogers.com. And I've got three in front of me right now proving how effective our email line, our email inbox is. The first one actually comes from a very, very important person. This is someone that sounds like they're in politics. It is Senator Ahmed Rufai. He says, "Hi, I am a senator from Nigeria. Good day. I will like to send my daughter, Amina, to your country for investment. If you could advise me on any profitable investment outlook in your country. Due to my political position here in Nigeria, I am afraid something bad could happen ahead of 2015 presidential election in Nigeria. This is why I will like to send my daughter to invest the funds in abroad. In abroad. I have huge amount of USD, 100 million, that I secretly kept in Ghana for investment. I really need your confidentiality and help this transaction. Hence, I cannot travel out of my country at this moment." So there you are. That's obviously something that it wasn't terribly sports related, but it sounds quite lucrative.
Looking for help.
"If you can assist my daughter to invest this fund, then we shall give you 30% of the annual profit and you shall remain our partner on a joint venture basis. I will like you to get back to me if you are willing to handle this transaction. Thanks and best regards, Senator Ahmed Rufai." Ahmed, thank you for the email, first off.
Long-time listener, I believe, actually, as well.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
I mean, if it sounds like anyone's learned English from Rhett Warner, it's probably Senator Ahmed Rufai. So, yeah, 30%. That's a nice return, Josh, if you're looking for some of that. Also, this comes from Scott on the fan feedback email inbox, fan960@rci.rogers.com. "We are hiring part-time job seekers with or without working experience and must be 30-plus years. $3,500 sign monthly for 2 hours a week. For more info, contact us." So that's pretty nice. And like, geez, wow. 2 hours a week.
That's Rhett Warner kind of money.
$3,500 a month. So that's 8 hours a month.
Can you forward me that one, please?
Yeah, that's an upgrade on what we make.
Yeah.
Maybe not Rhett. But you're not over 30, Josh. It says 30 plus.
I'm out.
So you can't get the $3,500 sign. So sorry about that.
That's too bad.
Another one, in fact, if you are looking for a bit of a pay raise, Josh, which you work in radio, so you are. "We are hiring people who can work as our sales representative from home with or without experience." Well, that's awesome. You don't have any experience, and it sounds like you're a perfect applicant. "This job will not interfere with your personal life." Sweet. You can still get hammered and have barbecues in your backyard and Snapchat all you want. "Or it won't affect present work, as you only will need to work 3 hours a week." You can do this. 3 hours is, you can squeeze 3 hours out of a week.
I hope so. I think I can.
Well, let's make it worth your while. The pay is $2,500 monthly plus commissions. If you're interested, kindly get back to us through our email. Well, there you are. So if you're looking for some new work or interested in meeting some senators from Nigeria and a 30% annual rate of return, hey, the RCI inbox, the fan960@rci.rogers.com inbox is full of great ideas. So
there
just
you go.
Fantastic stuff. Now, where I like to go for my interact right now is the text line at 960, and especially for the final segment of the program.
Talk about.
Talk about.
Talk about.
All right, so let us get to the text line, 960-960. You text it, we read it. First text, "Marcus Stroman is greater than Eric Lindros. Signed, Pinder." Well, that's not me. I didn't text that in, and I don't know. It's kind of like comparing apples to oranges, if you ask me, if you talk about Stroman, a pitcher, and Eric Lindros.
They're so similar, it's really almost like apples and oranges.
So I don't know that that's right. Weird, I got that same email from the Nigerian senator. I'm already doing a deal. $100 million is already spoken for.
Well,
so there you are.
Too late. We missed it.
Well, there's still $200 million because he had $300 million he wanted to invest. So he's invested $100. So you better hustle and get back to our good buddy, Senator Ahmed Rufai of Nigeria. You know, I was happy to see he got his money out of the country and was hiding in Ghana for a while. I was really worried about the political instability with him being the opposition in the new presidential campaign coming in 2015.
Dangerous for his daughter to be there, too.
Yeah, and you know what? She's got to get out of there.
She's got
to
get out.
I'm worried about Amina. I think the best place for her to invest the fund is in abroad.
Yeah.
So, are you guys excited by this coming January? Anderson, the Spider Silva versus Nick Diaz. This is Dudes in Bikini. This is UFC. Are you into this or not, Josh?
Not really entirely, no.
So, I guess the news is that Silva's got a fight. Was he had retired, or was it a long gap between fights? What's the news here?
I guess he's back. He's back for a fight.
Something. Okay. Something. Marcus Stroman is the next Holiday. Roy Holiday, right, Pinder? No, not at all. But he's a guy that's been their best pitcher.
So far, so good.
And if you had a one-game playoff, he would start for you. You would start him ahead of Dickey. You would start him ahead of Burley. You would start him ahead of Hutchison. You would start him ahead of Happ. Stroman has been that good. And if the playoffs started tomorrow, they would be in L.A., a one-game wild card playoff against the Angels. You'd probably have Jared Weaver. You would probably have, who's another big gun on that staff that is completely eluding me? They got some good arms there.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the other L.A. team. Grinke, of course, is the Dodgers. But point being, this would probably be the guy that your playoff lives would depend on. And frankly, the way he's going, I'd be comfortable putting him out there against anyone. He carried a no-hitter into the seventh 2 starts ago. Last night, 6 hits scattered over 7 innings, 8 strikeouts, 1 earned run. We're allowed to get excited about prospects. We're allowed. I'm not saying he's going to be a Hall of Famer. I'm saying right now, he's pitching great.
Those 2 great starts were against the Boston Red Sox, who have been struggling all year. So I understand where people are coming from to say contain the excitement. But at the same time, I understand where you're coming from and saying, hey, this is a guy who's been faring very well for us all season long. In all of his starts, he's done well. It's okay to get excited and maybe compare him or talk about him a little bit. Nobody's anointing him the next Roy Halladay, though.
Anderson Silva's leg apparently exploded in his last fight, if you recall. This coming from the text line. He grew a new knee right in the middle of his shin. Yeah, what is that called? A hematoma or something like that? When they usually get those on the head after a big lick. But yeah, he busted up his leg pretty good, I guess. So there you go. That's why it's big news that Silva's back in January, apparently, against Nick Diaz, according to the text line. It is what you want to talk about. 960 on the text line. Hey, Josh, does your blend of Raisin Bran and Rice Krispies, we were talking about mixing cereals yesterday, does that give you a little diarrhea?
I'm not going to respond because that guy sends in that mess about 8 times just looking to get red. So
I had a lot of diarrhea.
Not a little diarrhea, a lot of diarrhea.
I had a diarrhea and then...
How much diarrhea was there?
Why, is it funny?
It was funny?
Apparently it is funny. I heard Josh using the word primish earlier when talking about Subban. It happened to happen right after Rhett Warner called in. Is this the Rhett Warner effect?
Could be.
Primish is not a word, but again, if Rhett had said it...
It wouldn't.
Sloppish, you know, that's not a word either. So maybe there is a Rhett Warner effect.
Could be.
Do you guys like birds? I love birds. That's from the text line.
Birds.
You got a big smile on your face over there. What's going on?
Osh.
Nothing. I like Josh. Sounds like a beaut. But Pinder, you're still an interrupting bag.
Bag of garbage.
Exploding bag of garbage?
Exploding bag of garbage.
You need to reply to those great emails you get at the fan inbox. It's true. We really should get back to Senator Ahmed Rufai.
Start a little...
30% return.
Hey, reply from the Fan 960 email. Won't send in a virus to yours.
Ryan Suter makes $7 million per season, so where does PK Subban fit in there? That question coming from the text line. Interesting. Suter... does make big money. He was a free agent signing, going to Minnesota. The difference being, when he signed that deal, the cap was not flirting with $70 million. So teams have bigger budgets and can allocate larger portions of those budgets to a blue liner that you'd consider a franchise player, which I think Suter and PK Subban both are. Suter's cap hit is $7.54 million, roughly, give or take $20,000. I think that's probably a good starting point, but I think if you're PK's agent, you're asking for more.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're probably fairly comparable defensemen at this point. Maybe you'd prefer Suter. Maybe someone else prefers Subban. I would still take Suter right now, but I think Subban's got more ceiling to reach.
Yeah.
I think Suter is what he is at this point.
Yeah.
So, and also the cap's gone up. There's inflation, guys. This is not 2%. This is not government work raises. This is the NHL. Revenues are growing every single year. We're talking about a $3 billion business that was probably a $2 billion business when Suter signed that deal. Players get half the revenue. That's how this cap is determined. So 7.5 on Suter's old deal might be 8.5, 9 in today's money.
Yeah. Yeah, I think PK Subban probably won't get anywhere less than $8 million. Maybe 7.5, but I'd be very surprised if it's not 8.
Do you eat corn typewriter style or scroll style? What's your move, Josh? You know the difference there? Like the typewriter's left to right, and the scroll is like a lap of the whole cob, and then moving it around. You do the lap.
I do the lap.
You don't do left to right?
No.
That's a little unusual. I caught myself going scroll style the other night, and frankly, I was a little embarrassed. I'm more of a typewriter guy myself, but I was going all scroll, which is not my move. I don't know what happened. This is why Jim Rome has a 10 times better show, because he doesn't like a sport doesn't mean he doesn't know about it. Anderson Silva is one of the GOATs in MMA. Greatest of all time, I imagine you mean, my GOAT. You should know about him. Hockey and baseball aren't the only sports in the world. Yeah, well, you know what? That's fair. Pat Steinberg has all kinds of MMA. You can get all your takes this afternoon on the big show. I believe he's back today. Or is Kerr back today? Kerr's back today.
Steinberg was back the last 2 days. Pat's gone now.
Well, you're screwed then. Sorry, buddy.
No UFC talk today.
Is Moscow colder than Winnipeg? No, but Moscow's a big city. Moscow's about 11 million. Winnipeg's what, 700,000, something like that? Lisa needs braces. That for Jason. That, of course, has a lot to do with Phil Esposito, if you listen to the show regularly. For most people, that's a bit of a stretch. But yes, Lisa needs braces really is a text about Phil Esposito. Didn't know if you knew that. Have you connected the dots yet?
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Do you know what we're talking about, Jay? You do. Okay, that's good. Pinder, you're awesome. Keep doing what you're doing. Thank you. Thanks, Mom. Appreciate that. You're awesome. See you at family dinner on Sunday. UFC is crap.
Oh, now is we're going to see.
We're getting, no.
Now you're going to start this war on the text line.
Jeez.
Look what you've done.
Oh, dear. I mash my corn into a fine paste. Now that's good eating. I don't know who that is.
I don't think anybody does that unless you're an infant.
I hate how no one texts in with sports questions. Who listens to the stations and cares about how you eat corn? It's a very good question, except here's the thing. It's what you want to talk about, and that's just another text that's not about sports.
Yeah. She just added to what he hates to do.
Exactly. So now we have to answer the question, who listens to the station and cares about how you eat corn? Well, apparently that texter earlier on does. Golf is crappy-ish. Not from the text. Can't make sense of that.
No.
Is that prime-ish, crappy-ish? I don't know if that's related. By the way, if you're into some good golf, we've got a bunch going on locally. The ATB Financial Classic gets going, I believe, round one tomorrow. I've been bugging you. I want you to get that in your updates at least by Friday. And we'll keep an eye on Riley Fleming of Airdrie, as this is PGA Tour Canada's only event coming through the Calgary area, and a good one at that.
I agree 100%. It'll be in there.
Jordan Henry, born and raised in Milo, Alberta, rode the school bus with him. Well, congrats to you. And yeah, it was good catching up with him. UFC is great. Jordan Main, a local guy out of Lethbridge, is fighting on August 23rd. Check it out.
I like this one. I think Mason Raymond is going to have his best year by far. I'm betting his point total is going to be 50 to 60 points, 20-plus goals. I'm really hesitant on believing or agreeing with that, not because I don't believe in Mason Raymond, but what we've seen of local guys coming in. I think we're all really excited. TJ Gagliardi last year as well. That didn't really work out.
No.
So,
well, Joe Colburn.
Joe Colburn.
That went career highs across the board there for a guy that could stick in the NHL.
Yeah, but not near that level. I do agree with that, but I'm just a little bit hesitant.
Chris Russell, localish guy that, primish, localish. Local guy that had a really good year last year as compared to seasons past. What would career highs be? Well, he scored 25 with the Canucks in 09-10 and finished with 53 points. Those are both career highs.
That's a President's Trophy winning team.
I think if you get 20 goals out of Mason Raymond,
you're thrilled.
You've got what you paid for.
Yeah.
He's giving you good value. And again, I like to sign him because in 3 years, you should have a lot of guys not just knocking on the door, but taking roster spots away from veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Poirier, Klimchuk, Bennett, Monahan's already there. Johnny Gaudreau is on the scene. Bill Arnold and Corbin Knight may have established themselves as everyday NHLers by then. So it takes time. this is year two of the rebuild. Raymond, a nice filler, and really happy to be in Calgary. All reports, guys that I know that know Mason, thrilled to be here, wanted to be here.
Yeah.
This is a dream come true. Now, hopefully the on-ice product matches that.
Yeah, that's what you're thinking. I mean, we thought it would happen with TJ Gagliardi. It didn't happen, and I'm only comparing to one guy. But when a guy's excited to be here and wants to be here, that probably adds a little bit more value to him.
I need the rent money. Love you. Your sister. You don't even know my sister's name. My sister doesn't sign texts your sister at the end. Come on.
I like that.
You got to work harder than that. This show is suckish. Get the F out of here. Bring on Rome. True sports radio. Kirsch sucks. Well, some of those things are true, some aren't, but it is 10 o'clock, so we do have to go. And Jim Rome Show is next. Reminder, Blue Jays baseball, 6 o'clock. Join in progress. They look for a sweepy, sweep, sweep over the Red Sox. It is Mark Burley up against a call-up from AAA, Jonathan Workman. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll do it all again tomorrow, and the big show starts at 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.